Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
Hello.
It's the Ron Kelly Show.
Hey, yes.
The news you want.
Is the perception still that a black man with a gun is a criminal?
With the topics you need.
Marching might have been good for back in the day, but what kind of effectiveness is marching have on society today?
The Ron Kelly.
Black males 18 to 24 years old have highest homicide offending rate.
4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific. It's the Ron Kelly Show.
So don't get it twisted. Get it twisted.
On blogtalkradio.com.
Oh, yes, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Yes, it is the Ron Kelly Show. Just a teeny weeny bit, well, just a tad under the weather here Sunday morning. Happy New Year. Happy New Year to everyone, and welcome to the inaugural. Welcome to the first Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamar Gates for 2015. I hope everybody had a safe and joyous Happy New Year's. Well wishes to all our listeners out there. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on a cloudy and dreary kind of sort of type of Sunday morning in the Northeast here. January 2015 already. Jesus, January 4th already, 2015. Thank you everyone for joining us. And let me just take a moment and welcome my co-host, the inflappable one, I like to call him. He goes by the name of Lamont Gates. Good morning, Lamont. How are you?
Good morning, Ron. How you doing? Happy New Year as well.
Happy New Year, Lamont. Yes, boy, and it just, you know, it just, you know, the news reels, and it's the gift that keeps on giving. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Al Sharpton. Leave it to the New York Post, of all things, which has been so favorable towards blacks over the years. The New York Post with its story about Reverend Al Sharpton taking hush money not to speak out on selected racial issues. Plus, who are the politicians David Duke is threatening to expose if the furor surrounding Representative Steve Scalise, GOP Rep Steve Scalise, doesn't end. And, you know, we had an NFL ref, Ed Hockley. I don't know if you heard about this last night, Lamont. NFL ref Ed Hockley, during the Panthers-Cardinals game, he made a reference to, well, he says he was making a reference to a member of his refereeing staff, and he left the stadium mic open, and he referred to this person as Jungle Boy, and boy, did Twitter and Facebook and everything else light up, because everyone heard this, and it was on all the social media. It was all over social media that he referred to a black player as Jungle Boy, and I even jumped on the bandwagon myself. Suffice it to say, Lamont. So let me ask you this now. With all that's going on, are we just, you know, are we leaping onto the least little thing, Lamont? Is that what's happening now, that we're just leaping onto the least little thing that happens that even has a hint of a racial, makeup? Is that what's happening now?
Well, I think what it is, and I've said this constantly over and over again, we live in the age of information and dissemination. However, what takes precedence is dissemination rather than the information. People just don't want to sit down and read both sides of the story. It is easier to be stirred, okay? It is easily to be emotionally stirred over something that you're perceiving as an insult, whether it be racial, et cetera, whatever it is, rather than looking at all the facts of everything and seeing, you know, was this actually an insult? Was this actually a situation of race? And I think that's what we need to do here before everybody just jumps up and down from the floor to the ceiling. And I actually read on your Facebook post you got into it with somebody concerning this very issue.
Yes, and also on Twitter as well, Lamont. But I think at the end, after it went on, because it went on the sports, it went on a lot of the sports pages as well. Pro Football Talk and some of these other pages had posted about it. And at the end of the day, what Ed Hockley said was he was referring to a member of his staff who was upstairs in the booth. A member of his staff who was upstairs in the booth who they call Jungle Boy, and he's not black, he's white actually. They call him Jungle Boy because he went on a safari. Because the guy went on a safari, so they just started calling him Jungle Boy after that. Maybe they might want to find him a different. He might want to find a different nickname for him, Lamont.
Well, people will pose the question, and I'm playing devil's advocate here with you. Why would they want to call him that? Why not? If he went on a safari, if he went into the jungle, and if they're titling him a title that complements where he went, why not just refer to him as Jungle Boy? Why should blacks, in other words, get so infuriated over things that aren't even aimed at us? You know, is it a situation where blacks have a poor self-concept, meaning when someone hears the slightest thing, such as Jungle Boy, they jump up and go, wait a minute, you're talking about me, aren't you? You know, in reality, such is not the case. Let me give you a perfect example. A friend of mine who is of a white race, she offered her black coworker some sunflower seeds. She was eating sunflower seeds at work. She offered her black worker sunflower seeds, and the black woman just got so uptight, yelling at the woman, "What do you want me to pick cotton next?" It's just ridiculous. You know, if I'm offering you something that I have, it has nothing to do with your race. It has everything to do with me simply being generous. And I said, good thing you weren't playing double dutch either.
Well, you know, sunflower seeds is a staple in the African-American community, Lamont. And, you know, I think that we all are, you know, a little oversensitive to racial issues nowadays, and the least little thing that pops up can be misconstrued as a slight onto African Americans. You know, so that's what happened with that. And I tell you, it caught fire, and you know, the people who were calling the game didn't hear it, but everybody else heard it, and it caught fire. So I think that for the most part, we are getting a little beside ourselves in regards to race with the police shootings and all that's going on. We'll talk about that, some of those things, in a little bit later on in our weekend review. But I think we want to start right now, Lamont Gates, with your good friend, the Reverend Al Sharpton, your hero, Reverend Al Sharpton, and the story that was in the Post. I don't know if it was yesterday's or today's Post. I don't know if they even make a Sunday Post. But the story in the Post about the Reverend Al Sharpton taking bribes, for the lack of a better word, not to speak out on some potentially racial issues.
No. Well, this is not a surprise, actually, and I've heard this a couple years ago from a few people saying the way Al Sharpton gets his money, first and foremost, everyone has been curious, how does the Reverend Al Sharpton get his money? Where does he get it from? What exactly does he do that brings in revenue? And I have heard a couple years ago where people have stated that the Reverend Al Sharpton, the way he brings in funds is to shake down, quote-unquote, shake down these companies and accuse them of being racist or rather ensure them that the silence of them being a racist, a quote-unquote racist company, will not get out there unless you pay me X amount of dollars. And so this has caused a firestorm in itself. And, you know, Al Sharpton is a controversial figure. And according to the Post, the number of people, the particular companies that he's been able to shake down include GM, McDonald's, Verizon, AT&T, Walmart, Honda. I mean, the list just goes on, Rod. So this leads me to pose the question now about the Reverend Al Sharpton. Is he really actively trying to deter racism within the black community and institutions that deal with blacks, or is he simply trying to provide security, money-wise, to his own pockets and to his own organization? Because at the same time, the National Action Network was said to have been indexed in 2008 to the tune of $1.3 million. So now this raises that particular question.
Wow, interesting. You know, in the body of that piece, Lamont, it says, I quote, Al Sharpton has enriched himself with National Action Network for years by threatening companies with bad publicity if they didn't come to terms with him. Put simply, Sharpton specializes in shakedowns, the term that you used. And this is according to Ken Boehm, who is the chairman of the National Legal and Policy Center in Virginia, a watchdog group that has produced a book on Al Sharpton. And once Al Sharpton's on board, he plays the race card all the way through. And a source who has worked with the Harlem Preacher says he just keeps asking for more and more money. So, you know, this can be taken in a variety of ways. You know, the folks who support the Reverend Al Sharpton are just going to say, oh, well, this is just more of the same, more bad, you know, more of the same, more bad, you know, more of the same, you know.
They're trying to throw him under the bus, in other words.
Yeah, yeah, throwing the Reverend under the bus, more, you know, they don't like him because he's doing something for black folks, and it's more that people are going to say that. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, if, you know.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I read the article and I didn't see anything where anybody actually said, well, you know, Reverend Al Sharpton shook me down for this amount of dollars or that amount of dollars. I guess, you know, it's all hush hush. No one is saying anything, you know, anything specific in regards to what dollar amount he was given.
Well, GM did make a statement. A spokesperson for GM did make a statement about how he tried to actually get donations from GM for a long time unsuccessfully. And then finally, when a particular GM dealership was closed down in the Bronx, Al Sharpton threatened that, well, mostly blacks working there, you did it for racial reasons. And so he got $5,000 to $8,000 out of them. So that was a GM rep. And I believe the article stated that a Honda representative also was shooken down in 1998. Let me see if I can find that for you. Pepsi, 1998. He shook Pepsi down for for an estimated $25,000, claiming that you don't have enough black people in your ad. And as for Honda, here we go. Honda, he shook them down because apparently. He didn't feel that enough blacks were being promoted to management positions. So, I mean, how does Al Sharpton dictate, first of all, who you put into a management position? Let's look at the statistics of black Americans out there, especially men. Using inductive reasoning, when I go into most car dealerships, I see that most of those dealerships are dominated by men. All right? Once in a while, you say you have a woman, but most of them are dominated by men. When we look at the statistics in college in general, you see that there's a lack of black men in college. So when I equate the two, I would say that there's probably just not that many qualified blacks in these positions to have a management position, or just like they're not attending college, they're not applying for these particular management jobs or the car dealership jobs in general. So how can Al Sharpton just deduce that this is racism because there's not enough of them in there? You know, there's other factors going on that the Reverend Al Sharpton has to look at. But then again, does the Reverend Al Sharpton really care about race relations, or was this just a means to get money in his pocket? That's my question. I mean, we can't just look at the fact that, well, he's black and he's fighting for us. There's a lot of con artists in our race, Ron. So I think we have to look at all these things.
Yeah, there are a lot of con artists all over the place, and yes, in the black community as well, Lamont. What I'm reading is that in addition to that, he met with Amy Pascal, who was the executive at Sony when the hacking scandal and the emails were released, denigrating people like. I lost my train of thought. Denigrating people like Denzel Washington and Kevin Hart and et cetera, et cetera.
And President Obama, yeah.
Yeah, and President Obama, the Reverend Sharpton had a meeting with Amy Pascal, who was the executive of Sony, a 90-minute meeting behind closed doors. And this particular article says that Sharpton is to have say over how Sony makes movies. Now, I think that's a little, you know, why do these people put themselves in a position to get shook down, Lamont? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I understand. Well, you got to understand that was a hacking. They didn't expect for anyone to read those emails. But apparently, according to the article, the Reverend Al Sharpton said they did not discuss money. He did not discuss money with this Sony exec. Instead, she is going to team up with him in some sort of alliance to target racism in Hollywood. How ironic is that? You know, but
not going to happen.
Yeah, Right, right. But you can't overlook all the other shakedowns that did apparently occur by the Reverend Al Sharpton. So I think the black community needs to start looking closely. Close. Don't be, covered mentally by the race and the position that the Reverend Al Sharpton is holding, which is a quote-unquote civil rights leader. A lot of black people are just covered mentally with that perception and image of him, to the point where they will not go past it to try to see and reveal who the true person is and what his true motives are. So I think we should keep our eyes out on this. And like I said before, I've heard this many times in recent years that the Reverend Al Sharpton and the Reverend Jesse Jackson, by the way, were responsible for shaking down companies by way of accusing them, a lot of times falsely accusing them of being racist and going to the media or getting a payout and being silent on it.
Yeah, I read a story where the Reverend Jesse Jackson incidentally was drummed out of Ferguson when he went down there, and he actually asked the demonstrators for contributions to his Rainbow Coalition. He asked the demonstrators, and they booed him out of there. You see, Reverend Jesse Jackson didn't stay down there long because they ran him out of there on a rail because he was asking, he wasn't even asking companies who had money. He was asking demonstrators to donate to his Rainbow Coalition in Chicago, which is, Reverend Jesse Jackson has really lost a lot of his luster because of the baby out of wedlock thing. He was messing around with a woman. So his credibility has shrunk dramatically at this point. So to the point where he's a non-factor, Lamont, in a lot of these things. And I think that some of these news outlets, they just ask him when they can't get anybody else. He's like the last resort.
What I think it is with these two characters? I think when you reach a certain fame and financial pinnacle, that's all you're concerned about. You know, the original idea, the origins of your movement gets overshadowed by the fact that, hey, I got to maintain my lifestyle. I got to maintain my fame, my appearance on television, in the media. And most importantly, I got to maintain my network, which is, in this case, will be Al Sharpton's National Action Network. I've got to maintain these things so that I can make sure that, the correct funds are coming into me, on a monthly basis or a yearly basis. So I think they lose the luster of what they originally went into this whole civil rights activity for, because they've gotten too big. Let's face it. Al Sharpton walks around in the three-piece Armani suits that his followers will never wear, all right? They will never be able to afford to wear, not even on a high holy day to go to church. But, and I think that's what the black community has to start looking at. And if we go back to Ferguson, you'll see that a number of blacks that we know, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, are just down here for money. We don't need them here. So the more and more you see that, the more and more, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson just may get desperate to start shaking down even black companies. Who knows?
So shaking down Soft Sheen, the hairdo company. But Lamont, the other side of the coin, Lamont, is that how do these people get to these positions? How do they get where they are? We put them there. What I'm saying? Americans put them there. They revere the Reverend Al Sharpton. They revere the Reverend Jesse Jackson and other folks. And they place them in these positions of power without vetting them, without looking at the Reverend Al Sharpton, who I don't even know if he even flies, in a commercial jet anymore when he goes anyplace. I think the Reverend Al Sharpton may, I don't know for sure, but he's been on MSNBC for 3 years with his Politics Nation show. He's a nationally syndicated radio personality, and and the National Action Network is doing quite well. They have branches all over the United States. So it's kind of a double edged sword, Lamont, with the Reverend Al Sharpton, because he is doing something. He is doing whatever the case may be behind the scenes. Okay, we can accept that. We do accept that. But he is providing a service in the minds of African Americans. He is providing a service, and he is bringing attention to some of the things that are happening around this here United States of America. Lamont, quite frankly, which may not have gotten any type of attention had it not been for the Reverend Al Sharpton.
I think the problem with it is that sometimes these things that he's calling attention to, they're questionable themselves, you know. For example, Don Imus, you remember that whole situation. He called for him to step down. Meanwhile, there were black radio hosts, for example, Star and Buck Wild at the time, or maybe a little before Don Imus, who was making even infuriating incendiary comments about all races. So, you know, I think what a lot of people are looking at is what is he choosing to focus on and what is he not choosing to focus on? And you hit the key word when you said black Americans, the mind of black Americans. All they're seeing psychologically is he's black, he's a civil rights leader. Oh, there's racism. I'm just going to follow it because he said it. You know, let's start being conscious of who we're following, and let's start being conscious of their true motives, especially when articles like this are being revealed. You know, we have every right to question. The Reverend Al Sharpton just says we have every right to question a white Republican in the House of Representatives. You know, we need to start using both sides of our brains.
Yeah. Well, Lamont, you know, we only use 10%, I'm told, so the other 90%, although I do endeavor to try to use a little bit more than that, but speaking of that, that was a great segue, Lamont. Speaking of the House of Representatives, when we come back, we'll talk about Representative Steve Scalise and his dalliance, Lamont Gates, with David Duke and some of the Klan members. I mean, they had another name for it. We'll talk about it when we come back. And who's being held hostage? Because what Dems are being held hostage? What's the smoking gun here? What other representatives are there that he's threatening to expose? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more when we come back. It's the Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates, and it's on blogtalkradio.com.
Now, back with more of the fastest growing internet radio, The Ron Kelly Show, on blogtalkradio.com, and on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
Oh no, I'm in charge of our 10-year class reunion and don't know where to begin.
Don't let this happen to you. For your next event, wedding, anniversary, class reunion, or just need to promote your business, Burkett Promotions has you covered.
BurkettPromotions.com.
Over 200 custom-made products USA made, along with personalized imprints and logos.
BurkettPromotions.com.
Burkett Promotions does it all. Big or small, we can fit your budget.
BurkettPromotions.com.
Need your event to stand out with that personalized touch? Pens, pencils, t-shirts? Go to BurkettPromotions.com.
BurkettPromotions.com.
Mention the Ron Kelly Show and receive an additional 10% off an already great prize.
Thanks to Burkett Promotions, my event was a success.
BurkettPromotions.com. BIRKETT Promotions.com.
BurkettPromotions.com.
A business you can trust. A member of the Better Business Bureau, New Jersey. A+ rating.
Now, back with more of the fastest growing internet radio show on the World Wide Web.
And it's on. It's go time.
The Ron Kelly Show.
Absolutely, yes, indeed. It's the Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates. It's a little bit under the weather. Caught a cold up in the outlet. Saturday night, I believe it was, up in the outlet in Rockland County, New York, walking around there. Definitely not a place to go in the wintertime. Caught a bit of a cold and somewhat under the weather today, but can't let it stop me from bringing the show to you guys, Lamont and I. So thank you so much for joining us on the Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates. The phone number here is 347-426-3214. That's 347-426-3214. This portion of the Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates is brought to you by Davis Integrated Medicine. The phone number here is 973-783-3606. That's 973-783-3606. Or you can get them on the web. It's davisintegratedmedicine.com. That's davisintegratedmedicine, one word, .com. Davis Integrated Medicine. Live life well. All right. Let's get back to the program here. Yours truly, Ron Kelly. On the other side, Lamont Gates. And so, Lamont, we have our we're talking. You segue. You made a great segue into what we're going to talk about now with Representative Steve Scalise. And I'm very curious, Lamont, as to who might these other folks be that he's threatening to expose. You know, I'm very curious about that.
Yeah. According to the Huff Post, former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke issued a stern warning to Republicans who have criticized House Majority Whip Steve Scalise for speaking to a white nationalist group in 2002, saying they better be looking over their shoulders. Now, apparently what happened was Representative Scalise apparently met with a white nationalist group that was founded by David Duke himself. And then later on tried to retract it and say, well, I didn't know who these people were. I detest all hate groups. And I actually did not know that this was a hate group that I was meeting with. Now, he has caught fire from Republicans and Democrats alike. And so David Duke is now defending Scalise, saying, wait a minute, hold on, guys. Wait, hold on, hold your horses. I know both sides, Republicans and Democrats, who have clear connections to white supremacy groups. And if you guys continue to pound on my buddy Scalise, I'm going to reveal who you are. Now, that's some pertinent information there, right? Now, the article ends with saying President George W. Bush said that the news about Scalise's 2002 speech is as like acid to the Republican Party. However, the GOP leaders, including House Speaker John Boehner and House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, are still standing by Scalise. In other words, they believe him. They believe that he did not know that the groups he met with were white supremacist groups. However, David Duke, on the other hand, is, you know, just infuriated over those who are criticizing him for meeting with this group. And again, as I said just a few moments ago, he is threatening to release information about Democrats and Republicans who have ties to white supremacist groups. So, Ron, all these years that you've been talking about the Republican Party, you may be onto something.
Yeah, see, there you go. And you're 100% right, Lamont, that there is something going on here because it, well, first of all, I was really surprised that John Boehner, of all people, ran to the defense of Representative Scalise, you know, after this thing came out, you know, I think he put his own self in jeopardy. Now, Duke is saying that in that congressional district, he received 60% of the vote to be the senator, United States senator, and then the next year he receives over 60% of the vote for the governorship. So that's a really, you know, down there in the South, where Steve Scalise is a congressman, it's you know, the South has become a real racial you know, hotbed, especially in Louisiana. It's horrible. And Duke's group is called the European American Unity and Rights Organization. Now, they don't call it the Klan anymore, you know.
Right.
They call it the European American Unity and Rights Organization. Now, Lamont, now, you know, mark this down, you know, January 4th, that I've, you know, far be it for me to defend a GOP politician, but, you know, that name doesn't really, you know, it doesn't speak to the real heart of the matter, Lamont. I mean, it doesn't, that name does not, you know, there's nothing racial about that name. So is it a possibility?
Whose name are you referring to, Scalise or Duke?
No, there's nothing. The name of the group I'm referring to, I'm sorry, Lamont. The name of the group, the European American Unity and Rights Organization, doesn't sound like a racist group. So, I mean, could he have? Is there a chance that he may not have known that they were racist, or because of that name, can that give him a little bit of a, you know, can that give him a little bit of defense that the name does not say anything about race?
Well, you absolutely. He could be very well telling the truth. He could be very well truthfully stating that he did not know who the group were and what their true intentions were. However, the way that you kind of know who these people are is who they're connected with. Now, this particular union was started by David Duke, who you know is a white separatist, former Grand Wizard of the KKK, and I know he hates to be reminded of that, but facts are facts. That's what you were. That's exactly what people are going to constantly stigmatize to you. But the bigger picture is that he's claiming that there are Democrats and Republicans who have the exact same ties to these white supremacist groups and that they know exactly who the groups are. So that's the bigger picture. You know, we have the Democrats who appear to fight for the rights of the poor, the needy, especially the minorities. So when we go back to the Reverend Al Sharpton show, the Reverend Al Sharpton case, who are these people that we're vesting our stakes into? You know, who are these people that we are standing behind and casting our votes for? You know, again, if David Duke is being honest about these people having ties to white supremacy, then I think the voters just might go independent next time around.
It's a strong possibility, Lamont. But NPR actually has National Public Radio put out an article and they're saying that the idea is that Steve Scalise will survive this. You know, barring any new and jarring developments, House Majority Whip Steve Scalise is going to survive the story that he addressed the Conference of White Supremacists. And it says, unless further evidence emerges of liaisons with the European American Unity and Rights Organization, or Euro as it's called, Scalise will take his oath next week for the 114th Congress as the number three leader of the chamber's GOP, the party's largest majority since 1928. And, you know, lots of Republicans, you know, Lamont, prominent Republicans have come out. You know, Speaker John Boehner, the House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, and some others have come out and defended Scalise. It'd be interesting to see where this goes, how much of a shelf life this story will have. It'd be interesting to see, and will the shelf life be short? Because there are some Democrats who might be shaking in their boots on the sidelines. Say, you know what, maybe I need to just keep my mouth shut before I'm the next person who gets put on the hotbed. So it'd be interesting to see where this goes, Lamont.
Yeah, I can definitely see another Al Sharpton-like shakedown ready to occur.
So Al Sharpton, excuse me, everyone, so Al Sharpton's going to shake down. Well, I don't know if David Duke can be shaken down, especially not by the Reverend Al Sharpton.
No, but if he reveals who those names are, those politicians definitely probably could.
Okay, everybody, so in the words of Lamont Gates, Reverend Al Sharpton will swoop down on those people and make him cough up some money to further his efforts as a civil rights leader. But now, just alluding back to that for a minute, Lamont, I mean, what's really wrong with that? I mean, is there anything really wrong with Reverend Al Sharpton telling people, hey, look, you know, because to get money they otherwise wouldn't get? So
there's something very unethical about that. You're accusing me of being a racist, and I'm not. As I stated before, there are statistical reasons why blacks are not even working in my company, not because we don't hire them, but because they're not applying for jobs, and a lot of them don't have the skills to move up to managerial positions. So that needs to be explained to you before you come accusing me of being a racist. So, yes, and of course, the way society is today, the way the media backs the race baiting of the Reverend Al Sharpton and many other activists, these companies would be under fire and, you know, the community would turn their backs on them and they would lose their businesses. So it's easier to pay the Reverend Al Sharpton to say, knock it off. It's nothing more than a payoff to say, knock it off. Not that I'm guilty, but look, you have power and influence that could be detrimental to my business. And I don't want it to go any further. It's like a court settlement, per se.
Wow, that, you know, and I gotta, you know, agree with you, Lamont. That you know, but again, you know, what's really wrong with it? I mean, the Reverend Al Sharpton does not hold political office, so ethics I don't want to say ethics don't apply to him, but he doesn't hold political office, so he's got no, there's not going to be any backlash at the polls. You know, I think he's comfortable doing what he's doing. He's not running for anything. I mean, you know, he tried to be president twice. You knew that was going absolutely nowhere. And so
no, he's not. No, he's not running for office. He's not a politician, but he has the backing of the black community, who should be able to look through this guy and see what he's doing.
Well, I guess, you know, black folks are okay with shakedowns and the, you know.
Yeah, yeah, obviously, even if they're fraudulent.
yeah, and folks are putting themselves in positions, you know. I mean, in these days, too, Lamont, with the hacking, there's a hack a day, you know, going on with a lot of these companies, so on and so forth. And even, like, private people can be hacked as well. So you don't want to be putting too much on the, you know, you don't want to be sending these incendiary emails that could possibly blow up in your face, as it happened with Sony. Maybe you might want to, you know, we'll go back to actually calling people and talking to them, you know, because this it's always a possibility that these things can be exposed. And you know, they have a company infrastructure, a company electronic infrastructure where they send emails to each other, and you know, it can be hacked into. Just is what happened with Sony, and it could happen to a lot of other companies. So I'm sure there's a lot of them that are going around deleting or cleaning up those emails for fear that they could be exposed. So, you know, the Reverend Al Sharpton, he's an acquired taste, Lamont. You know, you have to put a little sugar in that spoon, you know. when you got to swallow the Reverend Al, you got to put a little sugar in that spoon to make the medicine go down.
more like high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, the Reverend Al Sharpton, Lamont's hero, the Reverend Al Sharpton, Lamont.
And by the way, let me say this before you go to the next topic. to end this note, I tried to reach out to the Reverend Al Sharpton myself through his PR person. I wanted to interview him for my online religious articles that I write concerning, you know, his personal religious philosophy. I wanted to talk straight religion with him, and I made this known to his PR person. Never got back to me. So again, I don't think religion and the title of reverend that he carries is even important to him when money is at the helm.
Well, Lamont, maybe you should have suggested that you might be willing to except a shakedown.
Oh, my phone would have been ringing off the hook.
Maybe you should have said, well, I'm willing to make a large donation to the National Action. Let me stop messing with Reverend Al. He might be listening to us.
Good.
He just said, well, you know, I'll be willing to make a large donation to the National Action Network. Or maybe even start up a chapter, you know, in the greater Passaic County area in return for, you know, because you don't get nothing for nothing these days, Lamont. You know that yourself. You don't get nothing, you know, for nothing. I mean, I've done a lot of arm twisting over the years trying to get people to come on a radio show, and, you know, some do, some don't. You just have to pick your poison, you know what I mean? And you have to, you know, what I've tried to do is pick people who I best believe would be willing to come on the program. And that formula, you know, has been working. You know, for the most part. Hey, but Reverend Al Sharpton, I don't know. That was a gallant effort, Lamont, to try to get the Reverend Al Sharpton to come on your show. But unless you're shot, unless you've been killed by a police officer or willing to be shaken down, I guess.
Dead men speak louder than living men, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, or choked out, you know, on Staten Island like Eric Garner and whatnot. You know, maybe you might have been more, you know, he might have been more amenable to meeting up with you. But yeah, it's hard to get in touch with these people. We've been doing this for a long time, and it's hard to get in touch with these people. And you know, I would love to have heard that. You know, if he would have interviewed with you, I would love to have heard you.
It wasn't about civil rights. It wasn't about social action. It wasn't about the National Action Network. I made it clear and plain in the email that it would be totally about his religious philosophies, because a lot of people are curious where he stands religiously on matters of spirituality alone. So since he bears the title Reverend, yet they never really hear him talking much about God. So I wanted to bring that to the forefront. Again, and this was happening during the time of Ferguson, so maybe he was busy trying to shake down the audience out there, as Jesse Jackson was. As you said, I don't know.
Well, if he's listening, he's definitely not coming on now after hearing that. But, you know, and we gotta delve – I want to delve into that a little bit, Lamont, when we come back from our last break. Because, you know, many of these churches, especially the big humongous ones, are non-denominational. And there was a story about, you know, about Joel Osteen. And I watched Joel Osteen. I like Joel Osteen. And just the fact, Lamont, that he's preaching in a compact center – they used to play basketball there, 30,000 or so seats, full, every Sunday, full. And there are folks who are you know, some of the more radical-minded folks and on Facebook and some other social media who are saying that these things are cult-like, because why would there be so many people, you know, filling a stadium just to see one person? And, you know, and they call it the new slavery, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about we got a week in review coming up. We'll talk about some of the things that are going on, the meeting between Mayor de Blasio and the police unions, and the burial of the other police officer that happened yesterday. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more when we come back. It's Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates, and it's on blogtalkradio.com.
The Ron Kelly Show. And on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
Some statistics are surprising, some are unbelievable, and some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%, and that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Now, back with more of the fastest-growing internet radio show on the World Wide Web.
And it's on. It's go time.
The Ron Kelly Show.
Yes, indeed, it's the Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates, the unflappable one, and we're right here on blogtalkradio.com every Sunday morning, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., and you can also listen to the show. If you don't want to go through the Blog Talk Radio rigmarole, you can just download the Igloo radio app. You scroll down to the Ron Kelly Show, press the button, and shazam, you're right there. One-stop shopping, the Ron Kelly Show on the Igloo radio app, so definitely, you know, you can... You want to make it easy on yourself. If you're out and about on a Sunday morning, you want to partake of the Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates, we welcome you to do so. This portion of the Ron Kelly Show is brought to you by Ellis Dance Studio, located in Nutley, New Jersey, 234 Franklin Avenue, incidentally. And the phone number, Ellis Dance Studio, is 973-320-2371. That's 973-320-2371. You can go onto the website. It's www.ellisdancestudio.com, www.ellisdancestudio.com. Ellis Dance Studio, we teach dance as art. Or 347-426-3214 is the phone number here with Lamont and I. It's 347-426-3214. Now, we admit, I'm going to switch gears for a minute here, Lamont, if you don't mind. We'll get to the rest of our show. We've got plenty of time. Because this is something that's right in your wheelhouse, I like to say, with the religion, and you know, and I just can't help but be amazed, absolutely flabbergasted when I watch shows like Joel Osteen, for example. I like Joel Osteen, as I said before, with the break. I like him. I watch him. I listen to him. And you know what, Lamont? Many of these mega churches are non-denominational. They're not Presbyterian. They're not Episcopalian. They're not Catholic. Many of these mega churches are non-denominational. So you think? Do you think? And you're an expert. Well, you're well versed on this subject. Do you think, Lamont, that maybe they're doing that so they don't have to adhere to the stringent rules and regulations of some of the other established religions?
Well, typically when someone goes and says that they're non-denominational, what they're trying to say is we are under the roof of one God. You know, they quote-unquote don't believe in the separation. As I spoke to you about, I believe when we talked about the abortion and we went into theology a little bit, and I spoke about how the Bible itself preaches no division amongst its believers. So that's basically what they're adhering to, that particular verse in 1 Corinthians. Now, when you talk about the size of the church, when you talk about the size and the magnitude of the church that the people are entering to, for example, Joel Osteen, to me, that doesn't really mean much of anything, because we see biblical examples. For example, in the book of Jonah, God sent the prophet over to the country of the town of Nineveh, which is currently northern Iraq, and he preached to 120,000 people, and they converted. Jesus himself, off of the Sea of Galilee, preached to about 5,000 people on land, and, you know, they gladly accepted his message. So the size of the congregation doesn't mean anything. Where the clear determinant comes in is the message. What is Joel Osteen really preaching? Is he preaching along biblical lines, or is he preaching outside of the Bible his own personal message? That's what makes someone a cult or not a cult. So they're wrong for accusing him of being a cult just because he has a big congregation. That's just silly.
Well, Lamont, well, yeah, I kind of agree with you. But and the other thing, too, well, you know, the message, you know, what I read was they were talking about his net worth. You know, many of these mega pastors are very wealthy. You take a look at Kenneth Copeland, who lives in a very large mansion on a big tract of land, many hundreds of acres. And as a matter of fact, there is an airport right next to his house. I mean, a private airport that he owns right next to his house, so he can land any one of his three or four Learjets right next to his house and just ride down the path to his front door. So, so what does the Bible say, Lamont? You know, what does the Bible say about wealth and he preaches having this mega wealth and living like CEOs and living like billionaires? What does it say about that?
Well, first of all, now you're getting into a separate problem. When you talk about church, you have to ask yourself the question, was church intended to be a presentation of the spirituality of God's word, or was it intended to be a business? Now, a lot of these people have indeed turned church into a business. What you see on television with these televangelists is only their message. What you don't see when the cameras are off is the tithe pot that goes around. So how many people is Joel Osteen collecting money from? If he's got a stadium-like attendance, that's thousands of people putting in probably, who knows, from $10 up to probably $100, you got tens of thousands of these people. So that brings in massive revenue to him. Now the question is he going into this in terms of coming out of it as a business CEO, or is he going into it in terms of really preaching a spiritual message? You have to look. You have to, you know, go back to the examples that you just made about the Learjet and the mansions and so on and so forth, and say that he's definitely profiting off of this and he's enjoying it. You know, my question is, what would happen if no one? If everyone came to church one day, but not a single person had money to pay you or donate to you or, quote unquote, give the tithe to you, but only wanted to hear the message of God, would you still be preaching? I think that's a question we have to ask Joel Osteen. But to answer your biblical question, there was a story of a rich man who approached Jesus and said, I've kept it, you know, I've I've kept God's commands all since I've been a young child, and you know, I've kept the Sabbath. I've done everything. I've loved Him, and so on and so forth. Jesus said, "Well, there's one thing that you didn't do," and He asked, "Well, what is that?" He said, "Sell everything you have and give it to the poor." You know, in other words, there are 10 commandments, to which Jesus broke down into 2 commandments, which was love God, as the young man was doing, but also love your neighbor. If you're really loving God, you would also love the people God put on the planet in His image. And if you've got the means to actually help these people by being wealthy, then you would do that. Now, I don't know what Joel Osteen gives in donations, okay? I would gather to say that the people who attend his churches probably need a donation more than the organizations he's sending money to. So you got to ask yourself the question, is he really doing this for business purposes, or is he really doing it for spiritual purposes?
Well, he's a best-selling author, Lamont, and to close it out, and many of the, you know, and the message is basically been prosperity, you know, for many of these mega preachers. The message is prosperity. There's nothing wrong with prosperity. From T.D. Jakes, who's an African-American, you know, Joel Osteen, Creflo Dollar. Creflo Dollar,
yeah.
Of all the names you could have with the last name of Dollar. I wonder if that's a question.
Which isn't his last name. And the so-called doctor before his name is questionable, too, since there's no university that actually claimed that he graduated from there. So, again, who are these people? You know, that's the central theme, I think, of this show today. who are these people that are standing in front of you? Yeah. Now, when you talk about prosperity, I have a huge problem with that, because that runs directly contradictory with the Bible. The Bible does not preach monetary prosperity. It does not preach wealth and fame and fortune, and that's how God wants you to be prosperous, according to these televangelists. The Bible preaches spiritual prosperity. In other words, you can be a rich man. There's a verse in the Bible that clearly states, what is it if a man gains the entire world but loses his soul? You could be a rich man and still not end up in the kingdom of heaven on your last day. Whereas you can be a poor man, came from nothing, went to nothing. I came into the, and then naked into the world I came, and naked I shall go out, Paul says, and still come into God's glory without having any of that financial wealth. So that's the true prosperity of the Bible. These men obviously are twisting this, because they know they can play the psychological game on their congregants in order to receive the kickback, which is the monetary gain from them.
It's a note that Joel Osteen does not collect his $200,000 salary anymore. He does not have any formal training as a preacher. He just took over when his father died, and he hasn't been to a theological seminary or anything like that. He just took over for his father when his father suddenly passed away. And he makes a lot of money from his books, which are all constant bestsellers. His net worth is about $40 million, Mr. Joel Osteen. So, we'll talk about that more, Lamont. We'll get a series. We'll put our heads together and put together a series that'll run over a couple different shows, a couple different segments about this. There's so much to talk about. But let me move on to the Week in Review, Lamont. Now, you know, the second funeral was held yesterday for the police officer. Police officer Wen Jian Liu, who 32 years old, who was killed along with his partner, Officer Rafael Ramos, on the 20th of December. Now, that Officer Ramos has already had his funeral, and Officer Liu's funeral was yesterday. Now, here's the thing. Now, Lamont, the commissioner, I want your take on this. The commissioner of the New York City Police Department has sent a memo out to the officers to stop turning their backs and stop disrespecting Mayor de Blasio. Lamont, I think that the commissioner is stuck between a rock and a hard place, between the men, the loyalty of his men, and his loyalty to the mayor. So that's a tenuous position he's in right now, Commissioner Bratton, New York City Police Department.
Well, I think he made the right decision, because, as we said over the past 2 weeks, it's just not, you know, professional of an entire police department to turn their backs on their commander-in-chief, the mayor. You may disagree with him. You may not like some of his comments. You may not like some of his decisions. You know, God knows we don't like all of the decisions of the bosses that we work for. But at the same time, they are our boss, and we must stand in some sort of respect for them. So I think what he did was he closed that gap that was there by getting the police department back on track, respect-wise, for the mayor, which he deserved. Let's face it, this is a funeral here. I mean, I think when you're trying to put on a funeral and pay your respects to fallen officers, and you got officers doing that, that deters away from the reason why you're at the funeral.
Yeah, and you know, now I agree, Lamont. That I think that's counterproductive, and you know, it just really doesn't make any sense. I don't agree with everything anybody said. I don't agree with everything President Obama says. I didn't agree with everything George Bush said, but he was my president. The plane. They found the plane, Lamont. They found this plane won't go down as a Bermuda Triangle
conspiracy theory.
Conspiracy theory or mystery. They found this one, pieces of it anyway, and they've recovered 16 bodies so far. So, you know, we're glad that the plane was found, but on the same token, you know, it's a foregone conclusion, Lamont Gates, and everybody, that no one survived the crash. So the latest, they found 16 bodies, and they found pieces of the plane, but they haven't found the actual fuselage, pieces of the fuselage, but they haven't found, like, a big, you know, the main piece of the plane. And they said some of the people were still in their seats, which is, you know, the most horrific. They're saying that the piece of the plane, the back of the plane fell off, you know, which is, oh, my God. You know, and I'm not a frequent flyer. I don't like getting on planes. I'm going to tell you the God's honest truth. I'd rather drive unless it's very far. But this is
right.
About me. So, they found a few pieces, and this plane won't go down as a Bermuda Triangle mystery, Lamont.
No, and that's great. And to add to the point you just made, I did hear recently that they actually found 30 bodies, and they found something that's about 60 feet long underneath the seabed, and they believe that that may be the fuselage. So they're definitely getting closer and closer to, you know, solving this mystery. Now, what made the plane go down in the first place? Apparently, the culprit that they're blaming is weather itself, poor weather. As the plane was taking off, it drove right into the eye of the storm, is what they're trying to say. And, you know, they just didn't know that the storm, you know, everything was clear prior to takeoff. They didn't know that the storm was going to push in that direction. You and I both know we can't control the weather. You know, it comes and goes as it pleases, you know, due to different processes that make it appear and disappear. But this was just a tragic, unforeseen event and everyone's worst nightmare that takes a plane. But I will still say to you that, you know, the statistics always point out that the flying is the safest way to go because there's not nearly as much traffic in the air as there is on the ground. However, on the flip side of that is if that plane goes down, your chances of survival are even less than in a car.
Much less, depending on how fast you're going. All right, so let me see what else. Yeah, all right, we got about a minute and a half left, Lamont, to the program. Thank everybody for joining us. 90 seconds, I'm just being reminded by the studio. So thank everybody for joining us. Lamont, we'll be back here next Sunday morning for another edition of the Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates. Any parting words, Lamont? You got about 60 seconds.
Yes, everyone out there, from your politicians to your civil rights leaders to your church reverend pastors, priests, or whatever the case may be, know who these people are.
Absolutely. You know, and they're challenging, and we'll talk about this next week, Lamont. The Reverend Clayton is being challenged, locally speaking, the Reverend Clayton is being challenged. Someone is not happy with his election as the president of the Patterson NAACP, so we'll approach that next week. He's being challenged by someone, you know, the assertion is some of the members weren't dues-paying members who voted him in, so that's going to be a bit of a sticky wicket. So we'll approach that next week on Ron Kelly Show featuring Lamont Gates. All right, everybody, thank you so much for joining us. I don't know if you heard anything about that, Lamont, but that's that's interesting, and we're going to approach that. That's a local thing with Reverend Clayton. Somebody doesn't want him to be the president. All right, so we'll see you guys back here next week. Thank you, Lamont Gates. And
thank you
for listening. We'll see you back here next week for another edition of the Ron Kelly Show featuring the unflappable one, Lamont Gates. Until then, everybody, take care of yourself, be well, and we're out of here.